This is Kelly Jones, and you have been listening to Spoiler Country.
People of Earth, it's time to enter the Spoilerverse via our secret portal at the exclusive Arctic Club in beautiful downtown Seattle with our hosts, John and Kenrick and Jeff. Welcome to Spoiler Country.
Hey, if you're listening to our show for the first time and you're on one of the social medias that we're on, like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, any of those kinds of things, you should always check us out on Spoilerverse.com. But if you want to keep up with our latest episodes, you should bring out your smartphone, get into your favorite podcatcher, find Spoiler Country, and hit subscribe. Then you'll get all our new stuff.
And if you want to reach out to us, you can do that in two ways. You can call us, leave us a voicemail at 707-656-2080. Again, 707-656-2080. Or you can shoot us an email at spoilercountry@gmail.com.
Of the Republic of Spoilerverse, welcome back to Spoiler Country. I'm Ken Agri, and that is Mr. Horsley. And today on the show, well, it's part two of our amazing interview with Kelly Jones.
You know, I think it's the first time we've had a part two in a long time. You haven't said a part deux.
Yeah, I don't know why I didn't say part deux.
It's because this one's special. It needs to be different.
That's the only reason why I say part deux is because of Hotshots.
Right. Well, today's part two. This afternoon's or whatever time it is, just in this one. Yeah. Kelly Jones part two. Kelly talks about his the time that he picked up 3,000 comics from a store and how it kind of changed his life. And it goes into that.
That convinced his mom to take him down there and let him pick him up.
Yep. And it's a lot of fun. You learn a lot more about that. And I mean, it always goes back to the you two talking about just your sheer love of the medium and of comics in general. So this one has a lot of really good behind the scenes stuff or behind the scenes of Kelly stuff.
That's awesome. I mean, yeah, I think that's what it was, is him and I just had the very similar tastes in comic books as a whole.
Yeah.
And just the fact that we are close enough in age that we're like, oh yeah, we had a lot of the same, shared history, you know, shared cultural history.
Right. You're both amazing comic book artists.
That's right. I mean, I don't know if you've seen my work on X-Men in 1979, but it was to die for. No.
Dude, you were the best 7-year-old artist ever.
Yeah. Five years were crazy good.
Yeah. But let's listen to a real artist talk about their passions.
A real artist talk about their passions. Let's listen to Kelly in his own words. All right. To me, when people talk about comic books, and if they are... if they don't get the medium, right? Because they haven't given the time to read something. Because there's a comic book for everybody. There is something out there that will make you love the genre or that medium in some form or fashion. There just is. But it's the people that don't consider it. Because to me, it's high art. You know? I put on the same pedestal as anything Picasso has ever done.
Yeah, but see the difference. I think what it is, what makes comics so wonderful to me is I'm alone in my little studio drawing it. And you're probably alone in your den or wherever room reading it.
Yeah.
It's a one-on-one. It's not like I'm not going to a big gallery. I'm not in a big theater. I'm not at a big concert hall with a lot of other people or
you're personally talking to me.
Directly.
I love it.
Directly.
Yep. That's how I've always felt about them.
And comic books, if I were to, you know, correct anything about them, because everything's they're fundamentally at their core perfect. I don't need a battery to make them work. I don't need anything.
Yep.
The sun comes up, I have enough light to see it. There you go. On a full moon, I can, if it's really close, I can see it.
Right.
I don't need anything. And it's tactile. And it's wonderful. There's a romance there to it beyond just the characters.
Kelly, I even like... going, it being extra careful and not creasing anything and grabbing my corners very carefully to read through my book. But then at the same time, I love it when I buy a book that is a quote unquote reader copy, and I can just grab it and open it up and just tear through it and have fun looking at everything.
Well, I still have my collection. I still have my collection from when I started in the 70s, right?
Oh, good for you. I wish I did.
Well, I was lucky in that there was this guy, a regular old used bookstore, and for whatever reason, he had gotten a big bunch of books that he wanted, and in it was about 3,000 comic books.
Yeah.
And he said, I was in there, and I was just, I was probably 15 or 16.
Oh, my
15.
God. Yeah.
15. And he says, I think there's about 3,000 in there. I counted just a few over 3,000. I'll sell them to you a dime a piece. If you want, you just go through it, pick out what you want, a dime a piece. And I said, well, I want the whole thing.
Yeah.
And he said, well, that's $300. And I didn't have $300 on me. I said, if you hold this, if I don't come back in a few hours, sell them. But if you hold these, don't sell any of them, I'll come back with the money. He says, done. Puts it in the back. I go home and I have maybe $150 lawn mowing money. And I go to my mom and I said, Mom, you got to front me this other money.
Yeah, yeah.
And she looks at me for a minute and she can see that this isn't just, I want to, you know,
she sees
a bicycle
the passion.
Or some, you know, yeah. It isn't that. So she goes, and she, not even, doesn't miss a beat. She goes, okay.
That's awesome.
And she goes, where is he? Where is this at? And I tell her where. I said, no, I can get there. I'll get over there. And she goes, no. If you're going to do this, I want to make sure you get there. I want to make, you know, at that point, I'm this little kid carrying $300, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So she gets in the car. We go there. She goes, and we can just drive him home. I give the guy $300. He gives me the comics. And in there are, like, the first 70 Avengers. The first, I don't know, 50, 70, 80 Spider-Man.
Oh, my God. No, wait. Kelly, start over and tell me slowly. oh, my God.
All of the first 50 X-Men, the first 50 Daredevils.
Oh, my
the
God.
The first – oh, it's everything. It was a perfect – now, when – I didn't know those were in there. I didn't go through them all. I just saw the ones on the top. They were, like, the first Silver Surfer and some Fantastic Fours and stuff like that. Like, I didn't
Steranko,
know.
Hello.
That was – yeah, I just bought them because it was instant collection.
Yeah.
It was everything. It was all of them.
Ugh.
Right? And I went home. I still have all these books.
Oh, you're so lucky.
And so I, you know, and then at that point, my friend who took me down there, who was in the comic book store, took me down to see Marshall. I would go pick out the ones I liked, you know, at that point, because I was all excited. There was Tales of Suspense and Tales to Astonish, which were my favorite books, and all this great stuff. The thing that makes it special, and I always try to tell people, it's impossible. Now I can't say, yeah, you got to go buy them. If you can get them in a reprint, whatever. When I buy reprint books, I try to go buy the old Marvel reprints because that's the actual colors. Now they have to recolor everything. But so I always tell people, hey, just go buy the old Marvel Fantasy Masterpieces or Marvel's Greatest Comics or Marvel's First Issue Classic, whatever those things are. Because those are the actual correct colors. Those are the actual metal plate print.
Yeah.
They're exactly the same. So you don't get it recolored. You don't get it. You get it as Spider-Man number 5 was. If you get it in Marvel's whatever the reprint books were then, it's the same stuff.
Yeah.
There's no difference. So I always tell them, you get them accurately, and you're only paying like $3 or $4 a pop or whatever they are.
Right.
Still to this day, they're not expensive.
Right.
But what happened is I had all these books for all these years. My wife had never, one way or the other, you know, she's a girl, right?
Yep.
Hey, comic. And about a year and a half ago, a year ago or so, where I had them stored, she says, do you know what you have? Do you know? And I go, I know what I got. I vaguely, you know, they're all in these bins.
Right.
So she says, you know, you should know what you have. So she goes, you know, I have some extra time now during this, the pandemic thing.
Right.
She just has, she, you know, does her work, but she goes through them and she was putting them in order and putting them on a database so I would know what I had. Right. So she's like really anal about it. So it's like, who drew it, when it came out, who wrote it.
Oh, I need to come over and do mine.
It's like, wow, I never even thought like that. So you could just hit it on a program and there it all is, you know? Well, what happened, this is very cool. What happened is she started reading them.
Oh, that's cool.
And she started getting into them. And now, like, she's really into, like, all these Marvel B-level characters. Like, she'll tell me how much she loves Tomb of Dracula. And it's so funny to hear her go, I really like Gene Colan. You know, he did a great – I made me go look at Doctor Strange, and then she became a big fan of these old doctors. And I'm talking the 60s and 70s stuff,
awesome.
Right?
Awesome.
She starts – all of a sudden, she gets mad at me because I don't have every issue of Spider-Woman. Because she started reading it, and she goes, you don't have issue 13.
Oh, what a great girl.
Right. So she gets online. She gets and finds these comic book – you know, one of the good things is I think there's some comic book stores that are doing – better than they were before,
right?
Because she's buying all these old books from every day. A pile of books comes that she's ordering that I missed here or missed there.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
and she got really into, like I said, the B level. She goes, "Hey, I really like Son of Satan. These are good."
Yeah,
and I really, really like.
I'm glad she likes it. No one likes that book. I love that book.
I told her, I said, I used to love the B level books because that's where the next generation of writers and artists came from.
Yeah.
So, and Marvel could test you and not, you know, get yelled at because Avengers was being done by people that were weird to them or whatever.
Right, right.
So you could find all this good stuff. But what happened was then the magic of an old book is she was enjoying reading the letters pages then because that's kind of the enthusiasm was there. The enthusiasm she's feeling, she's connecting with these people who wrote letters God knows how long ago, loving these books. So, you know, and she's telling me, like, right now she's all excited because she's going to read all the Ghost Riders and all the Werewolf by Nights because they're kind of, you know, Marvel spotlight on. And she's now knowing more about this stuff than me because I kind of forgot it all by now. You know, I know what I love, but she's reading them, like, and telling me, like, she wants to talk about what happened in Spider-Woman or how much she liked the old Carol Danvers Captain Marvel, you know. Old Captain Marvel to Starlins to then to Ms. Marvel, you know, that whole thing. She loves those things. And it kind of, when you're around that, it reinvigorates your enthusiasm yourself. And I kind of laugh. I said, you know, those things have been sitting there for a couple of decades and you didn't do anything. And now it's like she's yelling at me because I don't have an issue of Man-Thing that she wants to read.
I love it. I love it. Hey, having heavy influence from Lin Wein and Bernie Wrightson, you know, what was it like being able to not only be influenced them when you're young and having that Swamp Thing number 2 experience and looking back and going, oh my God, these guys are amazing, to fast forwarding, you know, 15 years and not, but being peers and friends with those guys on a career level?
Well, it's surreal. And I think it, not to overstate it, but it's, yeah. I was listening to several months ago, I was listening to, I forget who it was. It might've been some major rock guy. I forget who it was. And he was saying how, when he met John Lennon, he was a kid.
Yeah.
He didn't know what to say. He just babbled and he just sat still and he listened. And then, you know, and that's what it was kind of like. Cause when I met Bernie, it was probably about, I don't know, 7-8 years ago, I met Bernie.
Yeah.
And I'm not, I did a lot of promotional shows in the 90s, but I didn't really do anything after that because I was working all the time and raising kids and the whole thing. So I didn't really go out and do too much. So Steve Niles was very good friends with Wrightson, and he says, hey, Bernie wants to meet you.
Oh, God.
And we're going to be at this show, and he wants to sit next to you and just, you know, he digs you, wants to meet you. And I go, oh, God. And he says, because, you know, he's thinking, he says, you know, Bernie thinks, are you afraid to meet him or something? Or like,
right.
You know, I go, no, I'm there. I'll go. So I go, and I'm thinking the whole time I'm in the airplane. I'm going, what am I going to say? What am I going to say? I'm at the airport. God, I got to think. I can't just go up, you know, I love you. You know, I don't know what
to. You don't want to fanboy out on him.
Yeah. What can I say? What can I say that no one else has said, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm driving in to get to the hotel, do the whole thing. And, you know, that morning I go to the show and I know where I'm going to be, and I'm thinking, okay, I'll get there before Wrightson, and no, Wrightson's there already.
Of course.
And I'm walking up, and Steve Niles is there, and Steve goes, Bernie, here comes Kelly. There's Kelly. And I'm trying to say something, and God bless Wrightson's heart. He puts down what he was doing. He gets up, and he kind of – I don't want to say he runs, but he moves quicker, and he just hugs me.
Oh, nice. Wow.
And he just – and I don't know – I hug back, but I don't know what to do. I'm going – and he says, I am so glad to meet you. He says, I first want to tell you how much I love what you do. And I'm stunned. I'm still not saying anything yet. I'm like hit in the face. And I go, you're saying everything I should be saying. And I should be saying this.
That's amazing.
I'm going to say, and I tell him, I'm going to say all this. So we sit and we talk for a while. And he says, can we go afterwards if you're not doing anything? If you're not doing anything, do you want to go get a drink? Yeah.
Yeah. No, no, so Mr. Wrightson, I'm good.
Yeah. And we go out on this patio. We go out on this patio. And the first thing he does is, he tells the guy, one of the waiters there, he says, get us a couple beers. I stole the glass he bought a beer for me in. I have it. I wrapped it up and took it and brought it home. And
you're a fanboy. I love this.
It's in my wet bar right now, my Wrightson glass. So anyway, he says, and this is wonderful. He says, before we say anything, I'm going to tell you, because he knew. I'm just sitting there, and I'm sitting there signing books and whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
He just knows I'm in okay, and he decides to knock that away, and he proceeds to spend the next 2 hours telling me everything that he really likes about what I do, and how he would have never thought of it that way, and that he really enjoyed it.
Oh, and what a compliment!
It was, and it was what also a gentleman is. Because whether he meant it or not, he knew I absolutely adored him, and he wanted me to relax.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he did this. Now, I was – that's where I got teary.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Luckily, we were in kind of a dark place, and he couldn't see it, you know. And I was just – And I said, look, then I'm going to have to tell you some stuff. And I said, it won't just be – I told him the Swamp Thing 2 story. He loved that one.
Yeah, yeah.
That he loved that. But I also went and told him this story of an art teacher who told me comics wasn't art. You know, the old sing-song that illustration and comics are not art. Art is, you know, Van Gogh or Rembrandt or something.
Yeah.
And I said – my argument with my teacher was that she didn't know what she was talking about. And I said, I brought in his stuff, right? I brought in his eerie and creepy stuff. I brought in his Frankenstein portfolios because they hadn't come out in a book yet.
Yeah.
I brought these great examples of his incredible work. I had his Edgar Allan Poe portfolio. So I brought that in, and we're going back and forth, and this teacher's still telling me no.
Right, right.
No, just blah, blah, blah. Well, the rest of the class, was in college, so the rest of the class, figure drawing class, and the rest of the class is listening to this because we're really going at it. Because it's not just I'm defending Wrightson, I'm defending myself. My love of this is no less than her love of, you know, Matisse.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're going back and forth, and – when it was all over, I sit down and I'm kind of pissed off about this because she's just not willing to let, you know.
Yeah.
I said, I'll be honest with you. I said, Van Gogh can't do Frankenstein like this. Yeah, I'm just telling you that. And she got really upset when we were going back and forth. Well, these kids all in the class were wondering, well, who is this guy I'm talking about? They weren't comic book people, right? They're just regular people. And I just start spreading it around. I had his creepy and eerie stuff. I was letting people read that. And the oohs and the ahs from these people going through his Frankenstein, all these other art students. Ooh, wow. Oh, it looks like, you know, there's this great shot of Victor sitting in the rain. And they're going, you can almost hear the rain.
Yeah,
I remember one guy saying, you can almost hear the rain. And this one girl comes up and she goes, I don't like him.
Yeah.
They go, oh, here I go again. She goes, I go, well, why? And he goes, because I read this story and it scared the hell out of me. It wasn't that the art was good. It was Jennifer. She read Jennifer.
Right.
And it scared the hell out of her. She goes, this really scares me. And it's the reaction I've always wanted, is that's the reaction you want.
Right.
You do a horror story, you want someone to say, I'm angry at you because
it's visceral. It just,
right.
Yeah.
So the beauty of it was, and I had a look, I brought in a look back. I said, if you're not a good artist, they don't do a big hardcover book, as certainly not in those days. And anyway, the beautiful part was about 2 months later, I get hired by Marvel. And I had to go in and resign all my classes. And that was one of them. And I went in and I said, you know, I got to go because I said, I'm going to be one of the few people that ever, if not the only person, that actually will do something in art who took an art class. And I said, and you really had nothing to do with it. It was that guy.
Yeah.
That hardcover book was my textbook. So I got to tell Wrightson that story. He loved it. He loved that story.
Yeah, that's an amazing story.
it was true. And I told him I got to go from there. And then with Len would always be – Len loved to hear me tell the story that I hated his Swamp Thing too and then loved it 2 hours later. I must have told that story 10 times to him because he would say, you have to tell me that story again. I want to hear that story. He was a blast. And he had wanted to work with me on Swamp Thing since 1985.
Wow.
And I didn't believe him. And so he's out of the blue one day. I get this old magazine with an interview of him in it. I don't know where he must have dug up his own copy.
Yeah.
Sent it to me. And in there it says, I want to do Swamp Thing with Kelly. It was like from 1988. And I tried to get him to do it because Bernie had quit this thing and I wanted him to do it. And Paul said, no, if Bernie doesn't do it, no one does it. And da 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 da. So he says, see there, I'm telling you the truth.
I got proof, buddy.
I got proof. But Len and I used to talk all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, the sad part is when he passed, DC had approved a new series to be written by him and drawn by me with Swamp Thing.
Yeah.
And because the miniseries we did had done extremely well. And in fact, they just reprinted it again for Walmart. It's like its third.
The Dead Don't Die?
Time. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he had told me before, this is what I love about Len. He had told me before, he says, I know that, he says, I want you to trust me because we're not going to do, what obviously Alan did and subsequent stuff with Swamp Thing. He says, because he didn't know where I stood on Swamp Thing. So he just tells me, he says, to me, it's Alec Holland. He's still that guy who, you know, the chemical spilled on him and he fell in the swamp and he's a monster now.
Yeah.
Want to get back to that. And he says, I edited Alan. I love those things, but that's Alan's. I just want to do Len's. He says, nothing. He says, now, if you're not cool with that or whatever, I get it. And I said, I'm totally cool with it because I'm kind of the same way. I love what Alan did, but to me, it's still Alec, you know? And he's a swamp monster guy. and he's connected to the green and all that stuff, but he's still Alec the monster guy. I love that just because it's Frankenstein and whatever. So we connected on that, and then he just went to town. And he would always say to me, what do you want to do? And I'd say, you know, this, that, or the other thing, and he would do it. And
yeah.
I have to say it was one of the most absolute fun I had had. And that was Len's credo. He'd always finish a phone call with me by saying, and remember, Kelly, before I go, this is all about having fun.
If we're having fun,
they're having fun. And that was it. It's all about fun.
Well, Kelly, I think that's an amazing note to put a pin on this for today. Because we're like 90 minutes in. Can you believe it?
No.
I absolutely love having you on. I hope we can convince you to come on again. Because,
sure.
Wow, I mean... all the stuff that you've been through and all the stuff that you've had happened with all these amazing people it's awesome. I want to hear it all.
I think the thing with me is I don't do a lot of shows. I mean, I know people, but I don't know everyone and I'm not one of those, but I've been fortunate enough that, and the luck of my, man, if I were to sit down and just write the weird coincidences and luck things, it would, because it's creepy sometimes. But like my parents thought Bernie Wrightson was somebody I knew from school. I talked about him so much. And
I want you to play with that nice Bernie boy.
Yeah, because I would just sit in the back of the, you know, station wagon. I would tell them how great Bernie was.
Yeah.
And this is great. That's great. And they didn't know what I was talking about. And one day my dad just says, well, you ought to have him come over for lunch. And I'm like going, I said, well, no, Dad, he's this guy. So when Bernie passed away, my dad called me because he had seen that. It made regular news.
Yeah.
And he was really broken up over it because he remembered all that.
Yeah, yeah. He
remembered that, you know. And I said, well, you know, Dad, that kid, that teenage, young teenage boy in that bedroom in your house still has those posters up in your adult son. Still has those same Bernie Wrightson posters up, you know. They just went awesome. From place to place. But it's those kind of things that I've been very lucky I got to be with Len and Doug Minch and obviously Bernie, that I was connected to these guys who what makes them amazing is their work still stands.
Oh, dude, Bernie Wrightson's work, he has been and will always be, because of what he meant to me as a kid, my favorite artist.
Me too.
Because he's just so good. And it was those, they released that Frankenstein set as like baseball cards.
Yep.
And that's how I got introduced. I knew Bernie Wrightson's work before I knew who Bernie Wrightson was.
Yes.
Right. Cause
yes.
Because he did Stern on Heavy Metal. And I love that movie.
Oh man. Stern on Heavy Metal.
Ugh.
Okay. Stern in Heavy Metal.
Yeah.
Like, okay. I can tell you that there were people gasping at the comic book store when that issue came in. And they were just turning each page. And it was like, because he colored it himself. I think Bernie was the finest comic book colorist of all time. Maybe Michael Golden's right up there too. But God, when he would hand watercolor these things. And you look at it, it's just stunning.
It's he's amazing. But that like set, well, it was like a full Bernie Wrightson set. And they had like that amazing werewolf with the moon in the back. Ugh. Yes. And then, it was the scene, there's one card where the guy is like, he's got a bloody axe and there's a head on a post or on a Mementos. Table. Huh?
Yeah. It's the poster called Mementos.
Ugh. The detail. And, yes. And it's just scary to even look at it. You could see the insanity and it's just like, That was it. I saw that card collection. I had it. That was it.
Mementos is great because Bernie realized it's not anything more than the guy is pure. He's experiencing pure joy.
Yeah.
He got that across, that he enjoyed doing that. So you see that he's been doing it a while because some of those heads are very decayed.
Yeah.
And then there's that fresh one from some woman he just decapitated.
Yeah. Oh, God. His work Wonderful. Is so visceral and just.
And he tells a story in it. It's on a fence, so it must be outside. It must be nobody's found it, so it has to be really isolated.
These are great points. It's
wonderful, wonderful. No, I think what you're saying is the same thing. And Wrightson being discovered like that is the way it should be.
Yeah.
I discovered him, like I said, in Swamp Thing 2, and then various House of Secrets, House of Mystery covers and things like that.
See, I'm of the age Swamp Thing, the movie is what made
right.
is the first thing that introduced me to Swamp Thing. Lee Majors as the Swamp Thing, you know? Yeah. And then,
well, look, I just took a Heavy Metal job, right?
Yeah.
And it was for Heavy Metal 300. And I took it because of Wrightson and because of that movie, of the Heavy Metal movie. And they had asked me if I would do a sequel to the B-17 episode in it, where, you know, the guy, World War II thing, the guy,
yeah, and the zombies come out. Oh yeah, it's great.
He said, would you want to do it? And I said, well, let me see the story. And the story was excellent, so I said okay. But I really took it so I could say it's getting close to Bernie.
Yeah.
It's Heavy Metal. It isn't Captain Stern, but it's Heavy Metal. It's a horror story. Wrightson Stern was in that movie.
Yep.
Mike Plug designed that B-17 story. I did the storyboards for it. So it's that thing where I can connect that kid where we were all just amazed at at his work.
It's your Marshall Rogers for Bernie.
And it is. Look, they were the two guys who I thought did a perfect Batman.
I believe
it. And when I was drawing Batman, I couldn't even look. I did not look. For the 3 years I drew it as a monthly, I didn't look at Wrightson and I didn't look at Rogers because it would make me freeze. It'd make me think, I'm doing Wrightson.
I don't want to do Wrightson. I want to do Kelly, and I'm doing Wrightson.
It's too big of a shadow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you got to remember, I am not, and I don't mean this with false humility or humble or whatever. I am at my core a total fan. I'm not a professional by any stretch. I know how to do this. I know how to do the hard work of getting it in, making deadlines, transferring. I know to do that, but I've done it. That's just by repetition and over and over. Because when I got
hired by
Marvel, I'd only done maybe 20 pages of art in my life. Not even published, just maybe where I penciled it and inked it.
Wow.
Okay, I'd drawn a lot. And in those 20 pages I did, I'd sent to Marvel. They still have those pages somewhere if they didn't throw them out already. And
can we get them back?
So to me, I got to be a fan. Yeah, really. I got to be a fan that got hired. So I had a front row seat, you know. So to meet these guys, I always tell them that. I go, geez, you know, with Len, I said, Len, I know I've done this a long time, but you don't know how long I read all your Hulks with Herb Trimpe. I still go back and read them. You know, I read all the stuff these guys did. With Wrightson, I told him the excitement I got when I found his poster series, the Christopher Enterprise poster series. And I was able to find those. I said, you don't know what electricity that was. Bastard turned around and he pulled out. He had one print left of his great print of the long-legged ghosties and things that go bump in the night. And he had one left and he brought it to give to me and he signed it. And I don't know how he knew, but it's those kind of things.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's that's what makes me excited. It's that I get to, as a fan, to express myself like that.
You know, what's nice too is that you're meeting people that love the interactions like that with the fans, you know, because I've met, there's some artists and writers and creators out there that they just don't want that.
No, I'll be perfectly honest. I think 8 out of 10 usually are disdainful.
Yeah.
That's my experience. I've never been, because I still am the guy who remembers standing in a line.
You're the fan.
to get John Byrne to sign some of my books. Mm. And I bought a page from him then.
That must have been amazing. You know who?
It was a Hulk page or something from a Hulk annual or something from 90. This is a long, long time ago. Anyway, I was in that line and I totally loved every minute of it. And the best part of it was, I got to sit with him at a store and I was signing Batman. He was signing everything else that he, you know, 10 billion books he drew. But I got to tell him that. I said, you know, the best part of my career is that it gets me so I can sit next and talk to you while we're having a cool drink. And I can ask you and do all the goofy stuff and you have to answer me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's the chance to talk to all these people. Look, I'm like you guys.
Yeah.
These guys are – I'm totally in awe of them too.
I can feel it. I know it. I'm loving talking with you because I could tell that if you and I were sitting in line, we'd be bullshitting about something of a book that we have and that we're so excited to meet this person. Yeah.
All the way. And that's the reality of it, because I came to this as a fan. I more enjoy it as a fan. I'll tell you that this is God's honest truth. Sometimes I would go to these things.
Yeah.
I didn't say who I was.
Yeah.
I didn't get into it. I wasn't a guest or anything. I go pay my ticket, go in, put on my little thing so I could get around, but I make it to the working seat so I could go pay my due diligence.
Yeah.
Wrightson had said to me, how come we've never met? And I said, Bernie, we did meet, but you didn't know it was me. And I came up and I introduced I came up and said hi and how much I loved you and bought something of yours, bought some stuff, and you signed it and I walked away. And he says, why didn't you say who you were? I said, because you were owed that.
Yeah.
You were owed this. That Kelly needed to talk to you, not this fake, I'm not a peer. I said, you're you. and to prove it, I had a copy of the Polaroid. A friend of mine took a picture of us together.
That's awesome.
And this is like 1985 or 86 or something. I was just like 3 or 4 years into Marvel, right? And he looks at that and he goes, oh my God. I go, yeah. I said, I was at Marvel. I could have said that. Who gives a shit?
Right.
I hadn't done anything of note. I said, that's what it was. And he loved it. Sadly, when he became ill, and he had called and asked if I would finish Frankenstein. He didn't say I'm ill. He didn't say none of that was said.
Yeah.
He didn't say it to Niles either. You just knew. No artist quits unless they have to.
Right.
And obviously, if he had just said, let's say he was totally healthy and he was going to go, I go, no way, man. That's your baby. You finish it and then you retire.
Right.
But at that point, I go, I can't. You have to.
Yeah. You know, well, it's one of the greats asking you for help. How do you say no to that?
You don't. Yeah. And it was the greatest, I would say the greatest honor I'd had. I mean, it was, they were both very close. It was Bernie asking that and Len saying, would you do Swamp Thing with me? Out of just calling and saying, you're the guy I've waited 25 years. Would you do it?
God, it gives me chills that you had both of them talking to you near their end, asking you to help them with their work. And it's just like, fuck, how do you say no? And what does that mean?
My wife said that to me because she knows, you know, she doesn't until just recently. She knew comics only through me talking about it occasionally because I normally don't. She'll see me do this with friends of mine who come over like what we're doing right now. And she'll go, wow, that's a Kelly. I don't really see that Kelly, you know, where I just get into it. But Len and Marshall and Bernie, I spoke about a lot. And so when that happened, I remember on both occasions, she would sit there and go, I think we need to go have a drink.
Yeah. I think I need to have a drink.
I think you need that. And she goes, I want you to talk about that with me. And so I would tell her, that's when I would tell her those things. Because my kids, for example, my kids didn't even know I drew comics until they were 12 or 13 years old.
Oh, wow. What did they say when you found out? They were like, oh my God.
They were just,
that's cool.
They thought, they just were like my son, my oldest, when he found out, he shook my hand. Dad, congratulations, you have a job. He thought I just sit in this room and watch movies all day and listen to music, and his poor mother has to carry my sorry ass.
That is awesome.
And so he did not know. So he's just congratulating me for having a job. And because, you know, you want your kids to be kids. You don't want them to be fans or aware of this or anything. But I just never talked about it, right? I wouldn't talk about it. And so when those things came out, now it's like my first thing my wife says is she goes, well, I wonder what he's been saying to all like teachers and our friends all these years about you. Like he just sits around, you know, and that poor girl has to carry him. God, so
it's hilarious.
I know. It's amazing. It's amazing. But I'm always grateful for that because they have a distance to it.
Yeah.
So
well, they know you for you. They're not looking at it through a different lens.
And where they started to get it was when they got older, and then there were people who would know what I did, and you know where they go to school. Like I have a son. Both my sons have had teachers who are huge Batman or Sandman fans, and that's where they recognize like, oh, there's a power to that. What you know, there's a thing that then that happens. So that's there. But I'm glad it's been that way because they don't, you know, to them it's like I'm still the guy who says mow the lawn.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And they do it.
And we're the ones who's, I mean, we'll go to the movies and stuff and just, it'll just be regular. And I don't know any more than they know. And that it just, it's more fun that way.
What?
They've been to a few shows.
Yeah.
A few conventions now since.
They see the line of people trying to get your sign of cover.
Yeah, it wasn't like I thought they would react like, wow, Dad, I'm so proud of you. There's 300 people online or something. It was like, Dad, that's weird.
Yeah, I bet. Is
that weird?
Yeah.
Weird. And then when I got done, what they were excited about is we would just go to all the vendors and buy shit.
Yeah.
You know?
That's
yeah, that's what they would really dig is because we like the same kind of science fiction-y things. And,
yeah.
Game thing, whatever they are, and that's when they would dig that. But they, you know, and now at the age they are, they get it now. Now they get it.
Yeah,
they get what
it's
what
a love
it is.
And a job, and it's right. And you've been lucky to have that.
Right, and you know, but they don't. You know, it's like my wife never read anything I did.
Yeah.
And so it's weird now she's into comics because I'm going, nah, I'm not too sure I want her. Now she's going to complain how long Batman's ears are to me. And
right. She's going to have this critical eye she didn't have before.
Yeah, she's going to come at me and say, you're not as good as Gene Colan.
That's hilarious. Hey, what artists out there today of, you know, there's a lot of new breeds that have come up in the last, because I kind of feel like 2010 to now, there's been a really good amount of writing, and even the art seems to have jumped again.
I think what you look for in any artist is there's a lot of good artists.
Yeah.
That I find, and I'll look and I'll see that. But where you look, what I'm looking for is, and I don't know if this will come back again, but where artists, I think, because this happened to me and it's happened to other people, it's when you do a long run is when you really develop.
Yeah.
You learn the intangibles then. And that happened to me because not so much it was said as a challenge, but hopefully you're familiar with Doug Wildey, the guy who created Johnny Quest and great comic book artist.
Yeah.
But he's the inventor of Johnny Quest and stuff. And he was doing these fabulous Western.
Watched a lot of Johnny Quest as a kid.
Yes. Yes. And he had done this fabulous Western for Dark Horse. And this is some years ago. And I had done Alien for Dark Horse. And I was over at the Dark Horse booth just saying hello.